Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. I hope this finds you well. I am delighted to be bringing you today's guest, Thomas Hubel. Thomas is somebody that I have learned so much from in terms of doing deep transformational coaching, and I feel is a true innovator and the leading edge of the types of transformational work we can do. Thomas is a renowned teacher, author, and international facilitator. He's taught and facilitated programs with more than 100,000 people worldwide. He is an executive coach and trainer supporting CEOs, consultants, coaches, and leaders in their professional and personal development. He is the creator of the Collective Trauma Integration Process, and he's worked with many, many groups around the world. For example, bringing together thousands of Germans and Israelis to acknowledge, face, and heal the cultural shadow left by the Holocaust. And today we're going to be talking about some of the big ideas in Thomas's recent book, Attuned, which I think should be mandatory reading for all coaches. It's just packed with some really brilliant, powerful distinctions. In the conversation today, we'll talk about the types of transformational containers we can build with our clients. Thomas will share in detail what is he tracking and sensing as he's working with groups and individuals that allows him to assist them in healing and integrating and accessing their calling, their sense of purpose. We'll talk about what Thomas calls the individuation loop and this process of being and becoming. And we will get into the necessity for coaches to coach from their leading edge. What is this leading edge? How do we know when we've lost it or we've moved away from it and we get comfortable? And what kinds of inquiries and questions can we ask to get ourselves back there? If you feel like leaving a review about the podcast, I would really appreciate that. It helps us build the following and the podcast itself. And you can find out more about Coaches Rising at coachesrising.com. That all being said, let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Thomas Hubel. Hey, Thomas, it's really good to see you again. It's been a while, actually, since we last spoke, so I'm really excited to be with you. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm happy to see you. As you said, we didn't see each other for some time, and we had some regular conversations, so I'm happy to be back and curious.
What I noticed is I'm already excited because as we just tuned in a little bit before we hit the record button, you were already like hitting some really exciting kind of spots for me in coaching in terms of what moves me. So I'm sure we'll get into those things. And, you know, I just want to say, like, your book, Attunement, I think should be mandatory reading for coaches, you know. So I've just, it's so packed with goodness, you know, and insights and important distinctions that I'm sure we'll get into many of the topics inside of that today. And then just one last thing is, like, when I'm speaking to you, you're the person which all my friends are like, oh, okay, I want you to ask Thomas this, you know, ask him that question. So I come in with a couple of those questions too. So, but I think a good place to start is actually ask you, let's lay a foundation for people listening who are less familiar with your work. So could you talk about, I mean, you could just talk about your work in general, but maybe the individuation loop, this process of being and becoming, in a sense, you know, how you see us as human beings kind of developing. And yeah,
I think we could say there are basically, also in the wisdom traditions, there are three important powers or aspects, however we want to look at it, to understand. There's being. Being is consciousness, but being is also having enough inner space. So when we are in a reflective moment, when we are sitting with a client, there needs to be a certain amount of being. If our clients are too stressed out by something, we first need to find a way to create more space that our nervous system activates the part that can reflect better. Because when we are too stressed or too activated, then our capacity to reflect on our life is very reduced. So us as also coaches or therapists or facilitators, however we work, our interior and our state of being is key to what we can do with each other. That's important to understand. So being is the foundation. It's like the Buddhist emptiness, it's like all the mindfulness-based approaches are based on a certain amount of being. And that's also when I look at myself, when I go into my own interior process, I need a certain amount of space to be able to look at myself. Otherwise, I don't see myself. So, and that's true for our clients too, obviously. So being is an important part. And my lifestyle, as somebody who runs large groups, for example, if I talk about myself, like for me to be in a state of being that I can really contemplate the group, contemplate the CEO I'm working with, contemplate whatever is happening, is key because that kind of presence is viral. It has a transmission, so it transmits itself. Stress also transmits itself. And when my client is stressed and I'm not centered in my being, so the stress of my client might activate my own stress if I carry some inside. So there's an interference, and then I get stressed out that the client doesn't like the session or doesn't get what they need. And so there is this interference. So that's why I talk about being as an important part, because it's so simple that our complex minds sometimes disregard this a little bit. Then there is becoming. Becoming is expression. Becoming is energy, which means information in movement. And then we see that well-being is being in a movement, because how many people come to you and say, "Hey, Joel, like I'm in such a flow, I need a session." You know, nobody says that. Like when people are flowing, it's a sign that things work, that like things are unfolding. And most of the people come to us when they say, "Yeah, here's a pain point, here's a friction, here's something I really need to dive into deep. I don't see it clearly. I need your help," which is great because we are supposed to support each other, and that's where we come in as professionals to say, "Okay, let's reflect that back." So the original movement, and in a way we could say healing, is the restoration of the original movement. And healing is the capacity to build an ecosystem for transformation. So both, it's an ecosystemic process, and it's restoring the original movement of somebody or an organization. And so the growth is based on becoming. That's also my agency. That's what I want to do in life. That's what I'm passionate about. And so becoming is a very important drive in our life. And also important that becoming also calls me constantly. It's the source of my inspiration. It's the source of my innovation. And some people fall a bit asleep in what they built because it's more safe to say, "Oh, it works. I reached a certain level of success." And then we fall asleep in the success, because we don't listen anymore to the leading edge. And one day we wake up and we feel a bit shallow. Yeah, we can do this. We did it already many times, but it lost the eros. It lost the spark. It lost the wow. Like I wake up every morning, I'm excited about what I'm doing. If I lose a bit the train, the track of where my train's going, then I fall asleep in what I've produced. And we see this also with some artists that started off and they were a genius in their art, but then the success and the fame, and then you listen to the same music after 5 years, 10 years, you don't hear innovation. They didn't take it to the next level. And then it becomes normal, when in fact, once it was really exciting. And I think that's true for all of us. So we can talk more later about the commitment to our own becoming. And then we say, so being is space, consciousness, and awareness. Becoming is energy, information. And information creates a form. And the form is belonging. The form is relationship, but the form is building an organization, is a form. Contributing to social design or social impact is a form. So we form the world through the information that we bring. It's called inform. There's an information that keeps my body together. There's a flow of information that forms my body right now. When that information is hurt, certain processes don't work anymore well. When in an organization, the information flow, the relational information flow is disturbed, And when there are a lot of interpersonal frictions and stuff going on, it reduces the formation. It reduces the belonging, but it reduces also how effective we're forming things in the world. So there is being, space is conscious process, becoming is the process, and belonging is the structure that we build. And so there can be hurt in all different forms and levels in these three powers, but these three powers kind of create our lives. These are basic principles in our lives, I believe. And once we come more in touch with and understand these three, there's much more to say about it, obviously. Then I think that's a great foundation for our work. And when we see, like, every child comes from a state of being. When you look at the baby, see a space, and the baby is, in the first weeks, you can really feel the space, you feel the silence, you feel the openness, and then there's more and more structure. So how the information that the child is being born with becomes more and more body, a grown up. And so we can talk about this more. We call this the individuation loop, how from this freshly born, very spacious awareness, we go into really maturing into our maturity. There's a whole autonomy movement happening. And so we work a lot with that autonomy movement.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's so rich. What you just everything you described there, we could follow many threads. Could you say then what you think the role of a coach can be in relationship to what you just described there of this being and becoming and belonging? Yeah, and the kinds of containers that we can create.
Yeah, first of all, I think for me, the deepest role of a coach is that every one of us walks our talk. I believe most of the concepts you can take and trash. And I say this in a radical way because there's a lot of, okay, we have a lot of knowledge about coaching, but transformation works through our embodiment. If that knowledge is also how we live, and if that knowledge is congruent with how we go about our own lives, then it's not irrelevant. Then it becomes wisdom. And the difference between knowing and knowing is very important. So how we embody what we've learned, that what we've learned and read in books and studied, becomes actually embodied knowledge. So when you walk into an organization or when you work with a CEO or with a coachee, then you live, it's stored in you. In the relationship becomes an invitation for the coachee to learn from your nervous system, from your body, from your life. There is an active transmission of all the things that we can transmit, that we carry inside. So that's number one. So how we live and how authentic we are and how our word matches our inner state, which we call authenticity or being real or being open, vulnerable, truthful, all this creates trust. So our honesty is trustworthy. So when we are congruent, and our inner congruency is what transmits to the client trust. I feel you, like I wrote in the book, attuned. I feel you feeling me is the next step, is that I'm attuned to my clients. Like you have all the data inside. You're like a computer. And if I plug into that computer through attunement, then your computer data tells me what I need to know. So my mirror neurons, my heart, my body, there are different centers in us, in our nervous system, that can synchronize with the centers of our coaches. Or when I run a group, I do the same just with a group. I'm very attuned to my groups, and I get the movements in the groups. I get the movements in the client's body. I get the movements in your emotions. I get the movements in your relationship, how you move in and out of relationship. And every time somebody brings something that's more difficult, like a question that people are working through, there is always a preformed inner state that is not emergent. That's why it repeats itself. When something repeats itself, there's some preformed past. There's a crystallized past that is unresolved. So that's why for us is when we work with clients, I think we always work in two ways. I want to plug into your river. I want to be attuned to your becoming, to your purpose, to that which drives you, because that gives you a lot of energy. And that's a great resource. And at the same time, I want to be attuned when you tell me, listen, Thomas, this and this in my life is a bit difficult for me. Whenever something's difficult, it's great food for growth. Instead of something that we want to get rid of, we want to actually bring it. Bring it. It's amazing. It's amazing food for growth. And every more senior facilitator or coach knows that wherever we hit the edge, we grow and then thousands of our clients grow. Because every step we make when we are very connected and we have a good client base and we work with many people, every expansion I go through, everybody benefits from. So that's amazing. And I need to be committed to that so that I have a supervision plan in place, that I have a peer-to-peer intervention, that I can talk to people and say, listen, in this session, I walked away from that session and something's there was a leftover in me. I wasn't fully satisfied. I felt there was something we missed. These are great moments. Instead of saying, oh, it was not good, I say, great, let's take it, work on it, and then the pair, the couple, like the clients and the coach are growing together, because when there was an unconscious process, both are entangled. The unconscious of both had an entanglement. When we open it in the coach, the client grows at the same moment. That's how we do supervision. But it's an amazing process because like this, pop, 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 and the systems really grow. And I think that's amazing. So our own congruency, being able to establish safe relationships, I feel you feeling me, being really attuned and working with seeing, okay, what's your river? What's really driving you? And where does that river get stuck? Where is the expression of your, let's say, your soul's purpose? Where is that expression hitting rocks? Like in the river, you see rocks and then you see water swirling around the rocks. That's usually our questions. This is the same process. So some of the energy cannot flow through us. And then it gets stuck. And then we feel physical symptoms, maybe we feel emotional symptoms, we feel relational symptoms, we feel external symptoms that we cannot deal with certain things well, and they stay stuck. And so we can resolve this, and then the entire system can grow. And of course, there's so much more to say about this, but these are just, I mean, we could talk for hours about this question.
There's a couple of things that stand out, and I'll name them and see where you take it. Like, one is just this difference between knowing and knowing. And I think the invitation being made to the coaching industry, especially in the times where AI is coming in, it's going to replicate a lot of coaching interactions, which are more rational, step-based processes. So this kind of knowing you're talking about, where the coach is really in this expanded or deeper space of presence and stillness, congruence, attuned on this subtle level, which can leave can kind of have this feeling of being in flow together, attuned to what is emerging, whilst not trying to push to get anywhere, just kind of this sweet spot where there's like an embrace and inclusion of what's emerging, which includes both the maybe the unintegrated trauma or conditioning of the past, but also this sense of calling. And it's really stunning kind of sense of what a coach, the possibility for coaching. And so and so I'm just going to say that and then build on that and then see where you take it. Something you just said, which I find really interesting, and it's about this relationship between working with the unintegrated past and with our sense of calling. And could you say a bit more about the need for focusing on one or the other, or the appropriateness? Because what I've seen is When people get introduced to process work, often, and I think rightfully so, there's an orientation a lot more towards the unintegrated past, the painful or the shadow parts of us. And I've often wondered, like, oh, could we orient again to that sense of future or the sense of purpose that's calling? And even in our times, do we have time for everybody to do the trauma work? I mean, I'm sure you're going to give a great answer to this and push back, but is there time for everybody to do their trauma work? Do we actually need people embodying their calling inside of their imperfected brokenheartedness?
The interesting thing is that time is a result of trauma. When we say, do we have time to do the trauma work? We are ready, because for most of us, where we are hurt, time is split into the past that keeps repeating itself, and a kind of an imaginary future that is better than what we have now. So it's a result of that split. So when presence gets split through the traumatic impact, because traumas is here in space and time, when a child gets abused, when there's violence, when all kinds of stuff happen, here in space and time, in this experience, it's not good for me. It's not good for me. So splitting space-time into not here, not now, like putting some defense in place to defend myself against the overwhelm of the pain or whatever I'm going through, is absolutely needed. It's intelligent, but it splits space-time. So as a result, I cannot be present where I am wounded. I get activated, I get distant, I get indifferent, I get numb, I get all kinds of the trauma symptoms that we know. And so when we say, do we have time? Like, it's like with climate change. Yeah, there's such an urgency. Absolutely, yes. But the traumatic stress of our collective system is not urgency. These are two different things. And so it will always look like this, that we don't have time for the healing. Because trauma stress creates an activity that wants to get out of it. We are living in a world where we leave the world, all the trauma in the world is leaving. And then we say, okay, let's go to Mars and let's build a better life there, because anyway, the planet is toast. That's exactly the trauma symptom. That's exactly what we don't need. We want to go to Mars because we want to explore space. We want to go to Mars from a healthy base, not from a destroyed base. Then we become a cosmic virus, because we will reproduce the same disaster somewhere else, because we take it with us. We can't leave it behind. So back to your question, I think we need both. A good facilitator or coach knows exactly. Now we need to work on your purpose, where in presence, as Otto Scharmer says, in the you, the future emerges. So the future is not a later point in time. Your purpose is emerging when you are really present, in presence. And so if I'm attuned to you, I get immediately where you need to be supported. And if that's where we need to work, then we go there. It's like you go to the apple tree and say, this is a ripe apple, this is a ripe apple, and this not. So you pick the ripe apples. And that's part of the art. I think that's the craft, that I see my clients and I know exactly, oh, today we need to work on this. This is the next step. And then this opens up and unlocks a resource that helps us to work better with the trauma. And then the trauma opens up some energy that helps us to go to the next level of the purpose. And attunement, that's why I said before, I'm not critical with rational knowledge when I said most of the knowledge, when it's knowledge, you can take and throw away. The knowledge is very important. But there is an over-relying often on knowledge when the relationships that we build are sometimes challenging. And it's different. So the intellectual knowledge is important. If we embody it, then it's amazing. If I make this my safety, if intellectual knowledge becomes my safe place, then sometimes I elevate myself through Being afraid, I elevate myself a bit into a power position as a coach. I know more than you. And in fact, good coaching is that I bow down to you. You teach me about your life. I'm here to listen to you. Your intelligence teaches me, not I teach you. I might have a lot of knowledge and I might have a lot of experience and I might have seen tens of thousands of clients, but you teach me. That's the humility to bow down and say, your energy knows everything. I'm just here to be attuned to that. And I'm here maybe to reflect back to you what inside cannot be seen because it's wounded or it's hurt or it can't be accessed at the moment. So that we can reflect that back to each other. And that's different from organizational knowledge. When I come in and I'm an organizational consultant and I help you to build your organization better. So that's a different kind of knowledge. That knowledge is very important. We are talking now about coaching and transformational processes, not about the knowledge how to create business structures. That needs a lot of knowledge, and there it's amazing. But in transformational processes, my energy is transformational. Your energy with your clients is transformational, not what you know. And that also leads sometimes to this, because some people try to, okay, how can I get my client to feel something? How can we induce deeper emotions? Why do we induce emotions? If somebody doesn't feel, that's what the person feels. I feel that I don't feel. I'm numb. I'm overwhelmed. Why to override overwhelm? Or when somebody is very mental and constantly talking to protect themselves, yes, that's if you need that, great, I'm with you. But I will bring this more and more to your awareness that that's what's needed. But if that annoys me because I don't feel you really, and then I get triggered by somebody that keeps me constantly at the distance, then that's my issue. That's my issue as a coach. It's not the issue of the client. It's not a difficult client. It's just that the client's defense mechanism works like that. And if I'm attuned to it, I will find a gate in an elegant way to honor not feeling, honor hyper-rationalization. And then slowly we build the safety because we can be with it. I get the blessing of the defense mechanism to go deeper. And then the system opens by itself. And that's, I think, something that the trauma understanding gives us that says, in the moment a nervous system feels safe enough, it will detox stuff by itself. Once I understand that, then I'm done with all the inducing. I don't need to induce anything. I just need to create the space that the nervous system can detox, experience itself. And then I'm here to be with you. When that starts and the fears come up and whatever, everything comes up that needs to come up to be seen and transformed or integrated, we'll be together. But that then we have already a good base because that safe relationship is the key for everything else that's gonna emerge between us. And if we can establish that, then we can play like a piano. You don't play just the low tunes or the high tunes. You need all of them. So we go sometimes to the purpose, we go sometimes to the past that is hurt, and we will unlock clack, 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 clack. And I think that the art is to unlock, like with a ripe fruit. You pick the ripe fruit, and next time the client comes, there's another fruit ripe. And like this, we unlock the system step by step until there is a flow. And once it's flowing, you don't need me anymore. It's anyway working. So I drink my cappuccino and you have your success. All right.
Yeah, beautiful. I think just this so important what you're saying about we're not pushing anywhere to get to the emotion, or if somebody's being very cognitive or rational, we're not trying to get them out of that into something else. We're actually being with that experience, on honoring that experience. And I'm kind of hearing that you're helping the client to actually come into conscious contact with that experience. And then And so then the coaching unfolds, you know, that there's not you're not trying to get to some preordained place. And I think that's such a big shift, because in a lot of coaching, even if it's subtle, there is this sense of we're trying to get to this predestined place, a place that's better than here, where then I'll be more okay, or you know, whatever word substitutes for okay. So actually what makes me want to, and what I really like as well is that in a way you're unasking my question by your answer, which is, you know, to actually see purpose or calling, becoming, and this sense of being, or you know, like it healing as being separate, is actually they're not really separate things. They're actually the same process in some way. Maybe it's useful to just make a distinction.
Yeah, can I say something to this? Because that's, I think, a very important point that you're making. There is innovation that comes from what we call, let's say, our future. And our future is not a later point in time, but our future is a higher place in consciousness. So there's like innovation coming, new things coming that are exciting because they have a lot of errors. Otherwise, nobody would be innovative. If innovation was dumb and boring, then nobody would innovate anything. It's like with sex. It's like if it wasn't exciting, we wouldn't reproduce. So there is an exciting quality to it. And the same is with innovation. It's exciting to build a startup. It's not, oh, a startup. Who would do anything? So there's a choice of errors coming with the excitement. And when you have a great idea, you go and tell it to somebody, and the other person also gets excited. And then there is a shared excitement about the new innovative idea. And so that's one level of learning. But in the trauma is the experience and the learning that we've never had. So there's innovation from bottom up, collecting the parts that are stuck. In the stagnation, there is also learning. That's what we call post-traumatic learning. So in the moment we open that up, the person also grows and learns something. There's innovation in there. And there's innovation from what we call the future. But we see that we build a house, and the questions that are difficult for us are super important because there is important stuff in there that life couldn't learn yet. We called it integrating. That's why space, we can separate space in, or separate, we can give it three qualities. We can say space is the capacity to reflect. When you have a cup of tea, or when you sit with a coach or a coachee, like there's space. We create the space. Let's have a look at this. There's space. Then there is digestion. Every healing process is digesting the past that we couldn't experience at that time. So there's a digestion process. And digestion leads to integration. And integration is learning, is maturing, is maturation. We need a mature humanity to deal with AI, to deal with genetic engineering, with nanotechnology, with space travel. We need mature people for this. Because otherwise, it creates a lot of mess. And look at social media now. You can see all the regressive parts creating tons of polarization, tons of separation. That's not helpful, but it's an expression of, it's nothing to do with social media. It has something to do with our psyche and our collective psyche is using it. So there's innovation, but if somebody takes a nuclear bomb and throws it on somebody, that's a problem. That's a regressive problem. But it's not that the nuclear technology itself is not the point. It's how we are using it is the point. And I think we have to mature. So we need to work on both. It's like both is innovative.
Yeah, and it seems like the integration, the more I'm able to be with what wants to be met in this moment with the client in a way that allows that to be there, to be seen as it is with no agenda to change it, then that activates an organic process where that will transform and unfold into the new structure. That, you know, the client becomes kind of stronger, or I mean, maybe these are not quite the right words, but and then that kind of future calling can actually land more fully as well.
Yeah, it's like you're preparing the soil. The soil is fertile for seeds to fall and to ground and sprout. And so the more we healing is creating a fertile soil. And innovation is like the new things that can ground. But if seeds fall onto stones or not fertile soil, then they can't grow. And so we need, as you said, it's one process. The fact that we talk about it as two is already the trauma. But in all of our being is one flow, except stagnation creates a sense of two-ness. And that's, you said this beautifully before.
I'd love to go a bit deeper then into what you were just saying about when you're with a client or with a group and you're attuning to that person and you're able to kind of, sense like what wants to be met. And so, in a way, I'm just, yeah, I'm guess, could you say more about what are you attuning to? Like, what are you seeing? How are you seeing? What are you practicing in those moments that people listening might be able to hear that, would give people distinctions and clarities for their own practice. So, yeah, that's what I'd love to unpack with you. I mean, that's a broad question, but and we could maybe tie it to examples.
Yeah, like it starts with, first of all, every time I go into a group, I go and sit with somebody individually. I don't know. That's very important. I'm just listening to you. And then within that listening, like it's as if my nervous system, like also when we talk now, when I feel you, then my nervous system tunes in with your nervous system, and we create, and when you feel me, we create a mutual space for the conversation. And everybody that listens to our conversations and conversation and tunes in becomes part of that attuned space. So when we attunement, I think, is the most natural state. The fact that we are often not attuned is shows us how much of the information or the relationships are partly hurt. Or we are partly hurt, that's why we can't engage like that. But attunement is the natural data flow of the biosphere. I feel you feeling me is the natural state of preserving human rights. It's the natural state of right relationship. It's the natural state how we care about each other, how we care about life, how I care about your highest potential. It's not just an idea for me, your highest potential. No, when I tune in with you, then I want to feel your river, your stream. And that informs me. So whenever you tell me something about yourself, I listen, and then there are all parts of my nervous system, the nervous system that my the part of my nervous system that I'm aware of my body through, has the capacity to feel your body as well. So my body speaks body-ish, and your body speaks body-ish, and we they understand each other. So a body feels another body. Often we think about our client's body, then we need a translator. We need a Google Translate. But my body, so when you speak and you suddenly pull your energy out of your feet because you get scared, so I feel that. So then I see, oh, when you relax, I feel your relaxation. So when you talk about something that was more traumatizing for you, your whole inner body shape changes. Your emotional shape changes. When you're thinking, you go into different parts of your thinking. So we can also feel that. We train this in our groups. We do exercises like we give people assignments. Okay, now feel this, do this, do this. And we have the whole group watch what's happening. And then you can really feel like if you go into abstract thinking, because many people say, oh, I feel that. Yeah, I feel. But the person doesn't feel anything. The person is thinking about what they feel. Feeling when somebody feels their body. So my body tracks very closely when you speak about your emotions. If you really feel your emotions, or if that's what you think about yourself, or if that's what you really feel, because I can feel when you feel yourself. I say often the fact that we need to ask our clients, asking our clients what they feel is because we want to, it's an intervention. I want to induce you feeling yourself, not because I don't know. If I don't know what you feel, then there is something I'm not fully in contact with you, because my emotional system is supposed to be in resonance with your emotional system. So when you tell me about your life and I suddenly feel that you get a bit scared, or you get a bit ashamed, or you get a bit angry, my emotional system picks up on that. I don't need to hear this from you rationally for me to, oh, now you are scared. No, I feel that you are scared. And sometimes I have the impulse to ask, okay, how does that feel now? And then, or what kind of emotion is connected to what you're telling me? And then I look and I feel with you how you feel yourself. And then I look at what happens to our relationship when you're feeling yourself. Are you going away from me? Because people, for example, that as in their childhood, that haven't been supported in integrating their emotions, or were hurt in their emotions, they're usually withdrawn in the hurt place. So when I touch my trauma, I'm not anymore with you because I'm busy with myself here. And so when I see that, my client feels themselves, and then I say, okay, let now you feel your fear. Let's have a look. If you are still aware, not intellectually, of course, you know I'm sitting with you, but if you can still feel that I'm here. And many people say, no, I feel a bit distant. And I say, okay, so the fear has a certain age, maybe 3 years old, and has a certain relational context. And that context is important because once the person becomes aware of that protection, oh, I couldn't tell my parents that I was scared when they were fighting at home in their marriage. So I was scared and I was holding my fear. And today, when I'm running my company and there's a conflict, I come into the same place, and then I'm not anymore in tune with the conflict. And then I either need to put a power over interaction to shut the conflict down, or I'm getting scared and I'm not taking decisions. And so once I notice, oh, actually, I'm alone when I'm scared. And then once I feel that, that becomes a conscious process. So my defense is intelligent. But if it's unconscious, it keeps reproducing itself. If I become aware of that, then I feel, oh, fear. Slowly, slowly, I can open up, and then I can be with you while I am afraid. And when that happens, I get the first time again a sense of co-regulation. Oh. Your presence here nourishes me when I'm scared. And then you, from being a bit of a danger when I'm afraid, you actually become a nourishing presence. And that's when many people, because sometimes when people have this, like that they are working hard, but they don't feel supported, that's the reason often why people don't feel supported. Because part of the relational quality is shut down. They can't receive support. And then if I say, yeah, you need to be more nourished, and you need to establish more nourishing relationships. If I could do that, I would have done that already. So there's a reason why I don't have these nourishing relationships in my life. And one way to open this is, so I notice when I'm scared, when I'm ashamed, when I have, or even also when I'm angry, I can stay related. And that puts me in touch again, first with the coach, where I have a safe space to do this, and then I bring this into my organization, and then I can leave it there. And this will change some of my interactions. So all of these things we can feel, we can see, and we can learn to be attuned, as I wrote in the book. Like, attunement is the capacity to make the information field visible. And so this is one part. And then the last part to this is also, of course, we can extend this to your ancestors, to your parents, grandparents, great grandparents. So there's an ancestral part, there's a spiritual part to this. And we can extend it to the cultural sphere. We can do the same attunement with organizations. Every time I walk into an organization, I want to get a sense myself. And then I can get all the data from people that work there and give me their report. But I want to feel. I want to be attuned to the place. Or every time I go to another country, another culture, I do the same. I tune in with the culture. When I go to China, when I go to Latin America, to the US, like every culture has a different grid. And I want to be attuned to that grid. And from that grid, I'm going into the company as if there's a company, there's the electricity grid, I tune in with this, and then I go here. And then I can walk into this company, but I'm much more attuned to the cultural fabric in this country that's different from where I come from. So it speaks a bit of a different language. And so that becomes very specific. And then, of course, we can take this deeper and say, okay, much more specific data about the person. We can also attune to that and make more specific data visible together. And that's a combination of our intuition, of our inspiration, of our higher knowing, of our seeing. So there's a lot possible in this dimension. I think that for many of us that work with clients, it's amazing. Because then I can ask you, but I'm not asking you just to get the information. I get the information, what I sense, and I get the information that you tell me. And of course, in the parts where I'm hurt, I can sense you. So I need to be humble because that is not something that I know everything about you, but it creates more and more congruency and presence, and it gives my nervous system. I often say, as a coach, as a healer, as a therapist, as a facilitator, we are the environment in transformational work when we are healing more personal issues. We are the environment that our client never had. If I can be the environment that my client, as a 3-year-old, as I said before, when the parents were fighting, and the fear that the child feels, when I step in into the room and my nervous system becomes the protection and the soothing quality for my client to open up that young place, I become the mature grown-up that wasn't there when the parents had their regular cyclic relationship fights that really scared the child, and because they were regressive, they couldn't hold the child in that moment. So the child got scared. And I think that's just one example that I'm bringing now, but that shows it a little bit.
Yeah, that's really rich. I'm thinking here now of how this is the kind of work, and I'm curious what you think about this, that AI won't be able to replicate, or maybe it will. Maybe AI will get that good that it will feel some kind of regulation, but at least this kind of level of attunement and intuition and subtle refined sensing and attuning that you're talking about feels like such an important capacity. Let me just bring a few things in and then just see where you respond. Because what I found interesting is, like attuning to my grandfather or my great grandfather, it's fascinating because actually you start to feel a certain resonance, a certain revelation from that, and it's incredibly moving. And actually, there can actually be a kind of change in that relationship as you are attuning to your ancestors. Like that, this might be my experience. So you might speak about this, and the same thing with teachers. So as I prepared for our conversation today, I was just attuning to the call and to you, and there was a certain frequency there. Or if I in my prayers, I'm praying, sometimes to certain teachers who are no longer with us, there's a frequency to that. So it's something we can practice. And so there's this. So this is poor podcasting now, because we'll see where you take this. So the other thing I want to bring in is just, how do you, so there's like this level of like kind of attunement on a being able to support your client to come into contact with what's here, embrace it. I've seen you bring in reflections when I've seen you working with people where I'm like, wow, okay. I mean, I was like tracking Thomas to this point, and then suddenly It's like there was a leap, you know? And I was like, I didn't get that. But it, and then it just seems to land so perfectly for that client. So in a way, I'm wondering if you can speak into what to me seems like a kind of magical process, but of like the level that where I've seen you offer a kind of, I don't want to call it an assessment, but almost like a kind of a reflection which helps that client suddenly go, oh yeah, about their past or something like that's right, you know, like that it was like that with my parents and I did need to be in this way. So I don't know if that question is specific enough. Might be difficult without there being a, you know, a specific example we're talking about, but
No,
yeah.
I got it. Yeah. So the like you asked three questions. You've already said two times AI. So obviously there is something there with how AI will or will not replace
Probably in
us.
me, you know, like the
Yeah.
fear, it's probably a reflection of my fear with AI actually that I keep bringing it in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's how I hear it. Exactly. And then there is another question about the attunement to prayer or ancestors. And then there is this, and they are kind of maybe connected, at least the last two. So first of all, what I think when we look at AI, the emergent inspiration, that's why in a secular world, there's one thing we don't get, is the emergent quality of like a deep inner connection to a higher spiritual context. If that's not part of the equation, of course, we can recombine and build all kinds of new structures out of the way the data connections when we have a much faster recombination system of the data that already exists. In the more wisdom traditions, we call this embodied light. Embodied light is the conscious awareness of everything that has been created already. And that world will have amazing breakthroughs through AI. That's something that where AI really is strong and amazing. It's that we need that. It's fantastic. If suddenly the right coach will find the right client in no time because there's a super system to connect everybody to exactly their need and to recombine proteins from this to that to that and create all kinds of, it looks at the beginning also like magical, but it's a very fast data recombination that we can that includes an amazing pool of information. And I think it's really cool. There's something really cool about it. And it also has its huge shadow side potentially. But that's a kind of a conversation on its for itself. But there's another thing that I think happens for us in life is that we are, when the Bible speaks about in 6 days, God creates the world, and the seventh day, God rests. That didn't happen. It's happening, which means our innovation capacity and the capacity to receive the future is a tremendously kind of amazingly strong and powerful quality that is super democratic because everybody can have access to it. It's not dependent on your financial background. Everybody can connect to that power outlet. Everybody can connect to that data. It's like the cosmic wide internet. And we all have access to it if we want to. Sometimes we don't have the manual how to do that, but we all have access to it. And I know what I say now in scientific terms sounds a bit ridiculous, but in even quantum mechanics is slowly coming closer to what mystical traditions were saying for thousands of years. And of course, we are not there yet, but it's worth having that dialogue, let's say. And so to the third question you said is one, and I'm sure many people that work with coaches know what I'm going to say now, that when we sometimes sit with clients, suddenly we feel like saying something that surprises us. And I'm sure you had many moments when you sat with somebody and suddenly you felt something that you didn't premeditate saying. And when you said it, it touched the point. Boom. And I think many of us have this. So one of the effects of spiritual practice is that our inner space becomes more porous. That there is our intellectual knowing, but there's another source of knowing that when I'm really present with somebody, insights come in. And of course, we can explain this through attunement, strong presence, but also with this openness that I know suddenly things that I cannot know as a separate person, because we are not separate. But in a collectively traumatized world, we often feel separate. We feel separate from nature, sometimes from each other, all kinds of dimensions. And I think that quality, like when we have our own practice, for example, when you have your prayer practice and you do it regularly, you're activating something. And the fact that we don't have yet the full scientific language for this, sometimes this is being ridiculed for it, and people laugh about it. But there's something that you train, there's like a muscle that you train that opens something in you to other levels of consciousness. And that makes your system more porous. And then when you sit with a client, suddenly we see, feel, know, however, what's our access, stuff that seems a bit magical, but it's because all that information is here. The fact that we often feel too separate from each other doesn't mean that the information is not here. And so the more we are attuned, we are bridging that separation. And then you're like a hard disk. Your body is like a hard disk. If I know how to plug in the USB plug, then I can read your hard disk. And in this relationship, when we have a permission to really go deep, then we can take it to another level. It's not doesn't mean that we do this every time we take a taxi or every time we go to the supermarket, you know, then it's not needed. So it's also not it's not appropriate. And so that's that. And the part with the ancestors, I think it's very important, as you said, when you feel, when you learn, not just to think about the genealogy of your family tree, that's great as a beginning, but then ancestral connections and relationships are energy channels in our body. And if we say, like sometimes we look, I believe we look at the nervous system often too personal. So if my nervous system, what you can see anatomically is like a personal property. But that nervous system is an incredible biocomputer that together with the body and is like has a personal dimension. All the information of Thomas is, of course, encoded there. But then there is an encoded information of all my ancestors in the ancestral part of my nervous system. So when you tune in with your grandfather, it opens parts inside that when there is a hurt relationship, when there's intergenerational trauma, when there were difficult relationships. So the stagnation between different family members is a stagnation in our body. And so learning that attunement also means, oh, first I get to know my own ancestral tree, but then my ancestral nervous system, when I sit with you and you tell me about your grandfather, I can start to feel your grandfather, your relationships, because my nervous system is open. And the same is true for cultural fields. The culture you come from, I come from, the culture, if somebody comes from the US, Africa, wherever, we can feel into. With our collective, the collective part of our nervous system is part of the collective nervous system. And I think we are living in a world where a lot of even therapy and coaching has been over hyper individualized, as if the individual is a separate particle in the world. But when you go through nature, let's say you go through the forest, and I ask you, okay, Joel, where is nature? So either we can say, oh, well, nature is an amazing nature, but or we can say there's nature through us, because my body is as much nature as the forest. When we say, oh, we're society, it's not all the other people. I am also society. So society is through us, but often we look at it as if it was around us. And there is kind of a separation, and that separation is not what we started with, individuation. Individuation is a specific viewpoint, but it's nature looking at nature. I'm nature. And so when we could say, I think a thing that needs to happen, especially in the West, is to open the hyper-individualistic worldview and say, I am an individual and I am the ecosystem. I'm not just part of the ecosystem, I am the ecosystem. I am nature. Same as you are nature. You're not just part of nature. You are nature. You are society. And the built-in separation that makes us often feel withdrawn, what we said before with the three-year-old, once I have that built into my nervous system, I don't feel like I am the ecosystem in that moment. I feel like I'm separate. But I'm not really separate. I feel separate. And the more we can see, wow, individual ancestral and collective trauma creates a world that is very fragmented, creates organizations with a lot of fragmentation, with a lot of friction, with a lot of polarization inside, and anti-movements that all consume a lot of energy. And then we say burnout rates are high. We say the depletion is high, the motivation is low. But these are all trauma symptoms. We have to find a different approach. And when often in the business we'll say, yeah, but trauma is what it has to do with us, nothing to do with economy. It has a lot to do with economy. And not only in the organizational level, also on the macro level of the whole economy and the exploitation of nature. There's a lot to say about trauma, how all of what we just said plays out everywhere. And that's why I think the three questions that you asked, they are all in a way connected. And that ancestral work is very important because it opens parts in me that when I look at you as a person, I can look at your personal development when you were 2, when you were 5, when you were 10, whatever, or today. But your ancestral development holds information that I don't see when I just look at you as a person. There's more to you. And the tendencies in your ancestors, for example, I can give one example that if somebody comes from a socioeconomic background that is here and then has a great career and upgrades the socioeconomic background, we need a process to synchronize those two. Otherwise, if not, then up here, I will constantly be afraid that I will lose this, or I will do constantly unconsciously things that will preserve my newly acquired success, or I will be scared that it will fall apart again. But if I integrate my origin, my roots, and my current state, those fears will start to dissipate, and I can upgrade, I can integrate. There's an integrated development. And when we take the World Wide Web is an externalization of our nervous system. We have the conscious web, we have the dark web, we built this culture, and now we're looking and say, oh, crazy, that's how we look like from inside. And yeah, great. But what needs to happen now is we made a step to develop that, and now it's our that this can take me either more out of my body, and I get totally addicted to technology. I get more disembodied. I stop living a healthy life. I don't go out of my house. I'm just hanging out in virtual realities. Or I begin to ground the World Wide Web when I speak with you, and we are using that technology right now, and we feel each other, and we embody this conversation. Then we are grounding the internet through our bodies in all the formas. So the Stone Age and our time become aligned. And so hundreds of thousands of years of development sit here as a present stream. It's not that this is different from the Stone Age. It's the natural continuation. And integrated development always means there is initiation, the next level of development, and then there is the integration of that initiation into all the formal levels of life. So I have an opening, I realize something new, and then I need to ground that. And the wisdom traditions knew how that works, or know how that works. And so when we need both initiation, something new, manifestation, I walk my talk. I walk this new consciousness in all my being. Initiation, manifestation. These are the two streams around the spine. And I think if we understand that, then we can support also our clients. Are they in an initiation phase? Then I'll support them there. Or are they in the manifestation phase? Then I need to support them where the manifestation is hard because it hits their trauma. So we need to open this for it to flow more. And like this, it's an interplay. And it's not only a linear process. I'm describing this now with words. It sounds a bit linear, but yeah, but I think you described it enough.
So I know we haven't got long left. I've got one last question, but just the transmission of that systemic awareness, embodied awareness, and interconnectedness from what you just shared. You know, I've really felt, and it's a great example of attuning. You know, so even in our conversations, you're pointing to, and you're naming these experiences, actually, there's a resonance, there's an attunement to those. And I feel that this is, you're pointing to one of the big important shifts of our times of, you know, living inside of an interconnected, fluid, like experience where we are made in relationship with our environment. And it's almost like, yeah, like learning to attune to this, the system as it lives within us is like an essential skill. And like maybe that we can learn to kind of feel into the system where there's these acupuncture points that could, where there's stuck energy in some way. And so actually the question I have is just about what you just shared with this initiation and manifestation in terms of our own leading edge as coaches. And we spoke about this before we started recording, how, you know, my own process of coaching a while back, I realized, hey, you know, I'm just getting a little comfortable, or this feels familiar. And it was really on my edge a while ago. And I felt that that brought me into a period of reflection. And what came of that was this revelation. Oh, I'm kind of following something in a habitual way. It's not alive in me anymore. And it invited me to my edge. It invited me to think about what kind of experience do I want to create for myself and my clients. So I'm wondering if you could, and maybe it connects to this initiation and manifestation topic. Could you speak about the importance of being at our leading edge and how we can track that?
Leading edge is very difficult to track. It's like there's arrows. You wake up in the morning and you feel excited. You feel excited by what you do. It doesn't mean that you don't have any issues and problems that show up. It's great, but that's part of it. You know, like I'm going with groups into very painful places. They are very dark, they're very painful. They're like, of course, it's not that it's comfortable all the time, but that's not the point. But I feel when, for example, when we work with deep Holocaust wounds or with racism or with all kinds of other wounds, it's not comfortable to be in the process because we are dealing with very painful realities. But whenever I'm there, I feel so on purpose. I feel so on place. Or when I work with an organization and there is a new issue to solve, I feel like, wow, this is amazing. And it doesn't mean that immediately I know how to do it, but I know I'm gonna find out. And so whatever I do, and I feel excited about it. And the excitement means, and then when I'm in groups, every group I run, I learn something new. I say, wow, yes. And I think that's a sign that you are there where life is emerging for you. And you said it beautifully. You said you described exactly the state that we need to be awake when we feel it becomes a little bit sleepy, it's comfortable, we make a lot of money, it's like things work out, it's great. But the juice is missing. Something's missing. The sparkling light of innovation starts to fall asleep a bit. And that's not a good or a bad thing. We don't want to stay in this pathologizing view of the world. We want to go into I call this the grammar of language of transformation, that has a different grammar. We don't speak in a certain way once we understand certain principles of development. And so it's not that that's good or bad. It's just something to be aware of, as you did. And you said, oh, I think I need to reflect a bit. I need to have a space to feel what's actually calling me. What's the new coolest thing? I often call this in my group. What's your coolest thing ever at the moment? What's exciting you? And it doesn't mean that I have been teaching certain things thousands of times, and I don't felt once that it's a repetition. It's not that I constantly need to do new things, but I feel my entire being is being nourished by the leading edge that trickles down to, even if I teach something again, it seems, it's not again because it's refreshed by my leading edge. And I think that everybody's work is exciting. And as I said, it doesn't mean that everything is all the time new. We are not in a kind of a consumerism economy that I all the time need to buy new things. It's that if I feel nourished by my own leading edge, and it means also I'm committed to that leading edge. I'm committed to that more than what's comfortable in life, because sometimes my leading edge might call me to do things that might be scary at the beginning. It's new. I don't know. I need to figure many things out. And you need to make a step. You need to walk into a new room that you don't know. So when my inner calling calls me to a new room, I go. And when I need to be in places where it's uncomfortable or maybe even dangerous, yes, if my calling takes me there, I go. And I don't go there because it is like that. I go there because I feel my leading edge takes me there. As facilitators or coaches, I believe we all make an agreement with the universe. We say we get a blessing, because I'm sure that many people that work with people know that effect, that when you're with your clients, it seems like you are one notch more intelligent than sometimes in your own life, like that there's something that elevates you, because the energy opens up. When you open up your energy, the energy opens up more. So there's more flowing through, or people that run groups might know this. And that's great. Once we are committed to do our work, our integration work, and that we are committed to listen to the leading edge, that yes, that's my leading edge, and I am committed to listen to them. And I think if we And that's more important than the external manifestation of things. That's what I said with art before. It's like when some artists, they really have a spark, and then something happens, and the success and the machinery of success dampens a bit the more radical spirit of the artist. That is like suddenly the sword becomes more blunt. And you feel it. It's not anymore the same genius excitement than when they started. And I think for all of us, we need to feel if that's true, and not to judge if it's not there at the moment, not to say, oh, it's bad, I lost it. No. But I recognize that's that, and then I will I will, as you did, I will go into contemplation. I will get inspired. I will see what attracts me. I will see, okay, where I will listen more inside and outside. What's that? And then for some people, and that's I think also important for the coaching work, is for some people it's also that that we, because some of our clients, one energy stream is done. And it's a bit scary because when you let you had your career path and you had a you were successful, but then one day you wake up and you feel, Then for some people, there's really an upgrade listening to the next stage, and then it takes you further. But for some people, that stream of their career ended here. It's like a river that stops. And that's good because for that time being, it was great to be on that river. But then sometimes it's scary when the new thing doesn't show up yet and the old thing is old. That's how we get old. Old means I'm losing the eras of my development. And so to be able to stay in the limbo of that change process, sometimes it needs a good coach to be able to stay there. Not to try to find fast, and like to be able to, I don't know. It's like you are reincarnating into another life while you are living your life, and you need to be in that limbo state until the next level of energy takes you to the next wave, like a surfer, like it takes you. And so that's also, that's a bit of a different process because for some people, sometimes what they did until now is not what they're gonna do next. And we need to know this.
Yeah, beautiful. I'm aware of time, and so just want to give you space. I mean, this it's been a really extraordinary conversation for me, Thomas. I really, really value, and I'm very grateful that you were able to give this time and so generously shared yourself. So just want to express my gratitude first, because I feel like, this is what we're talking about today is one of the real invitations and callings in our times for people. So, and do you want to name where we can find out more about your work as well?
Right. I want to say one thing that what I said before that I'm not suggesting when I said that when I sometimes go into dangerous places like that, I'm not suggesting to expose oneself to danger that that's the only way to do it, but that we go into the like the edge of our kind of conscious universe and there we sometimes don't know, we don't have the regular GPS that we usually have. So that's important for me to say. Not a suggestion to expose oneself to danger. And where we can find out more is Thomas Hubel, HUEBL, thomashubel.com is my website. The Pocket Project is our NGO that does a lot of collective trauma work. And the collectivetraumasummit.com is our annual summit that you know. And yeah, and we are doing the trauma-informed coaching and consulting course now that you also generously sponsored. So that's also exciting for me that trauma-informedness is entering more and more the whole coaching sphere, which I think is very needed and will is very powerful addition to the coaching knowledge. So yeah, so these are a few things, and there are many more. And of course, the book Attuned that you said before.
Thanks, Thomas. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.